Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senior citizens have Medicare. Baby boomers keep a close watch on Social Security and taxes. But what's the key issue for America's college-age students as they prepare to cast their first presidential votes in 2004? Right now, 9.5 million 18 to 24-year-olds are enrolled in the nation's universities. Surveys suggest these campus kids could be a swing vote, a key swing vote, in 2004. This is not lost on the candidates who are aggressively courting the youth vote. It worked for Clinton when he jammed on MTV. This time, it's John Kerry jamming with rocker Moby, Howard Dean making the rounds at Dartmouth, Al Sharpton on Saturday Night Live, and George Bush standing tall on the war front. We wanted to hear how college students around the country are viewing the presidential race early on. We've invited four students from four schools across the country to join us for a national on-air campus caucus. Tonight on Point, America's youngest voters size up the field and the future. Will 2004 be your first presidential vote? Do 20-somethings and 50-somethings have the same stakes in deficits, civil liberties, Iraq? And what's your question for these purely 21st century American voters? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let me introduce our quick caucus tonight. Joining me now from Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, is Charles Mitchell, a junior at Bucknell University and president of the Bucknell Conservatives Club. Good evening and welcome back to On Point, Charles Mitchell.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you again. With us from Oberlin, Ohio, Renata Strauss, a junior at Oberlin College and treasurer of Oberlin's College Democrats. Good evening and welcome, Renata Strauss.
Good evening, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you.
With us from Madison, Wisconsin, Evan Retlasky, a senior at the University of Wisconsin and editor-in-chief of the Daily Cardinal student newspaper. Hello and welcome, Evan Retlasky.
Hey, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for being with us, Evan.
No problem.
And from Pullman, Washington, Bridget Elliott, a junior at Washington State University and president of Washington State's College Republicans. Good evening and welcome, Bridget Elliott.
Hi there. Thanks for this opportunity.
Oh, well, it's great to have all of you. Thanks so much for joining us. We hear a lot from a lot of people, but an awful lot of what's going on these days is going to end up falling on your shoulders. So we're really interested how you're thinking, early on as it is, about the presidential campaign and how it's all unfolding. I wanted to ask each of you, just as we head into this, for a quick temperature of what's of sort of mood of your campus and how focused people are at this point, in general, and specifically, I guess, in the groups that you represent. Renata, let me go first to you there at Oberlin. What's the political temperature there? Are people really paying attention to the upcoming campaign and election?
Well, I think that students at Oberlin realize that this is going to be one of the most important elections that we have a chance to vote in, and especially since for most of us, it's going to be our first. I believe that many students are beginning to really sit up and take notice of the Democratic primary. I think that right at the moment we have, you know, more of a front runner in Howard Dean here than anybody else, but you know, that's really up for contention. Our fight mostly on campus in terms of the College Democrats is to encourage students to go vote. So voter education and registration is really what we're doing right at the moment.
And that's underway already. Charles Mitchell, let me turn to you in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. How about the political temperature at Bucknell? Do you see a kind of ramping up, or are people still waiting for primaries and all the rest to begin?
Well, there's this thing here at Bucknell, Tom, that everybody likes to call the Bucknell bubble. We're in the middle of Pennsylvania. There's nothing around. We're 3 hours from any major city. So sometimes you kind of feel like none of the news gets here. And I think in some ways that's exaggerated. I think a lot of colleges are pretty apathetic. But it's
there are many bubbles around many colleges.
Yeah, I think people here like to exaggerate it just to make themselves feel better sometimes that they're political activists. But
do you think it's because you're in Lewisburg or because
students there are just young enough that, that they don't have the sense that this is all really hitting them.
Well, people say it's in it's something about being in Lewisburg, but honestly, it seems to me it's about being young, and it's about, you know, not in my backyard syndrome. People care about things when they matter to them. The issues that people care about on the Bucknell campus are few and far between, but they include things like alcohol policies and speech codes. They include, you know, things that touch their lives. Not many people out there care about Howard Dean and Al Sharpton, and I would bet that if you took a poll here, not many people know who they are.
So it hasn't fully broken through yet. Boy, that's a claim. That last. We'll have to test that notion a little bit tonight. Bridget Elliott, how about at Washington State, in Pullman, Washington? What's the political temperature on campus these days?
Well, I would agree with the amount of apathy that is seen by the majority of the student population. I'd say that there are a certain few watching closely more the national issues in the upcoming elections. I know I'm ecstatic that I get to finally vote in one, but I'd say that it's polarized because of the issues and the way our actual political culture is in America today. Campus sort of reflects that as far as there's like a left and a right, but there's not a lot of cohesion on the liberal side, whereas there is a faction of Bush enthusiasts, but a lot of sort of confusion. And I guess I'd find it problematic too if I had nine very different candidates to choose from.
Oh, those poor Democrats, so many choices, but Republicans, just one glowing president.
Well, it's a negative. I think it's the difference between trying to bind yourself or relate with a negative campaign or a negative message, because
the Democrats have to work to push Bush out of office, don't they? That's their job.
Right, that is their job. However, I think that it would be hard with young people who do not necessarily pay much attention to cling to negative views.
And maybe aren't so interested in the negative. Evan Ratlaski, let me put the same question to you. What's the political temperature there? I guess more than that, what's the leaning on the campus? Do you have a sense at Wisconsin? Is there a pronounced preference yet, or do we? What's the profile?
Well, conservatives are more active than they may have historically been on the college campus. We're still a liberal campus in general. We're far from apathetic. We're concerned about a variety of social issues, which is true. On the left, there isn't a sense of political unity, but I think that we understand the importance of this election enough to rally around anybody but Bush is sort of the message that everybody seems to have. And I think that that we are going to get out and vote, especially with Wisconsin's primary being so early. We actually do have some clout, and the college vote does matter.
You come in before Super Tuesday, as I recall.
We do.
So you've got some standing in the run-up there. Evan, let me put it to you, the sort of big issue that it would seem to me would be of interest to people your age, and I guess in your case this is not the first time you'll have voted in a presidential campaign. I think you did in 2000. But with so much that's going on, not being paid for currently, but being put off to be paid for by your generation and the generation even behind you, is that something that's very much on students' minds? When people watch the war in Iraq, when they watch the bills coming through Congress, with the cost of the prescription drug coverage and all the rest, do you find yourself or the people, the students around you, saying, my gosh, we're going to have to pay for that?
Well, some of the students around me do. I think in general these fiscal issues do go over the average college student's head, in that they're not as immediate. I think it's social issues that we're more concerned about. It's the war that we're more concerned about. These are things that we can see and we can object to and we can have a stance on. With a fiscal issue, there's almost a sense that it's a lost cause. With something like Social Security, our generation is basically told, don't expect to have it. With something like Medicare, we might have an understanding that it's not where it needs to be, but there's not much we can do about it. We seem to focus our energy on issues that are more immediate.
And Charles, let me put the same question to you. You're an outspoken conservative there at Bucknell. What about the burden that's being readied for your generation, the fiscal burden?
Well, I'd have to say it's not a huge issue here. We have a conservative magazine here at Bucknell called The Counterweight, and we ran a story a couple years ago, front page, on privatizing Social Security and trying to get people to care about the huge costs that are going to be imposed on our generation and no benefits vis-a-vis Social Security, and it doesn't fly. It's really hard to make people care about things that are that far in the future. In some ways, I think that's human nature. The war, honestly, has been a much bigger issue here. And I would agree with what was said before about that being something that people think is more of an effect on their lives. I mean, I even personally, I don't like what's going on right now with Social Security and Medicare, but I think the war is much more important.
Really front and center. Renata Strauss at Oberlin, how about the war in Iraq? How's it playing there? Have you had protests? Is it a galvanizing political event or not?
It absolutely is a galvanizing political event on this campus. Really, that's been, I'd say, the focus of political discourse here for about the last year. The day after we went to war, actually, about two-thirds of our student body walked out of classes in the middle of midterms. It was kind of a crazy week for us. And I agree with what Evan said. I think that because these social issues seem more immediate to us, we're more likely to pay attention to them. You know, and I think that will really be a key issue for the Democratic candidates, at least in terms of Oberlin students. I don't know about other college students, but for us, it definitely is.
So when you say social issues, I guess you're putting war number one. I mean, social or foreign policy, whatever you want to call it. What else falls in that hamper at Oberlin, Renata? What else is a social issue that gets students interested, focused, excited?
Well, I would say that there are two main issues. One would be reproductive rights. The recent passing of the partial birth abortion ban created quite an outcry on campus, as well as gay rights are a really big issue here. And I think that candidates that are willing to step forward and stand up for more liberal policies in terms of gays in the military, as well as same-sex marriages or civil unions, extending those sorts of rights, will really do well on Oberlin campus.
Bridget, let me put the same question to you. What are the issues that you see getting people who are interested in politics fired up at Washington State?
Well, I agree that the war did galvanize a lot of more political activity and more opinions being expressed than normal. We hosted a support our troops sit-in, and we estimate that about 17,000 students participated.
Out of a student population of how many?
About 17,500. We're just banking on most people going to class.
So that's a pretty universal sentiment there, supporting the troops. I guess that's a bipartisan sentiment then at Washington State, supporting the troops.
Yeah, it was mostly to react to a lot of the walkouts and the vocal anti-war protests and sort of like the message that was being sent. But I've seen that there's more apathy now that we've gotten back this fall, and people haven't forgotten, but there's much less activism, like, visibly. But I would say that things like affirmative action, that would probably be the second largest issue on campus. And if you look at, like, our editorials written to our school paper, a lot of them are about diversity on campus and the debate with that.
Bridget, are you registered yet to vote?
Oh, certainly.
And
that was the first thing I did when I was 18.
And you're obviously registered as a Republican.
We don't register by party in Washington.
Oh, all right. But you intend to vote Republican.
Well, I intend to vote for President Bush for
right.
the election.
That's what I want to ask you about. What's your sense of how George W. Bush plays among his admirers on your campus? How is he perceived? Who is George W. Bush to you?
We would consider him a very strong leader, principled. He is not afraid to make a stand and carry through. I think that is a good quality of any leader. I'd say that he is bringing us into sort of a new era when it comes to foreign policy and foreign relations, as well as like social issues.
An era that you welcome.
Pardon?
A new era that you welcome, I take it.
I would welcome what's going on right now, definitely. I think that we should revert back to more of a classical liberal system and discouraging the productive, like the growth of government and social programs that are draining, like Medicare and Social Security. We should look to other methods like privatization.
Evan, how about at Wisconsin? What is George Bush's image? What's his reception there?
He doesn't go over too well here. We don't particularly think kindly of him. In general, this is because the left is so vocal on our college campus. But you see signs with him looking like the devil. He's not a very respected leader here.
And when you hear Bridget describing him, is there a substantial, I don't know, perhaps minority group in Madison that might see George Bush in these same terms, a strong leader who knows what he wants and is going to get us back to good old time values?
You know, I wouldn't say it's a minority. They're not as vocal, but, I mean, they are there. Just because the left is so vocal in their opposition to the president, it doesn't mean that there aren't conservative students or even moderate students who do support and respect the president. But if you step out on the streets, if you read the papers, if you just follow the exchange of ideas here, he doesn't go over too well.
Evan, Bridget, Renata, Charles, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're holding a campus caucus tonight on the presidential campaign 2004, talking with America's youngest voters about their impressions, their issues. We've got a lot of candidates to talk about and a lot of issues. Stick with us. Will this be your first presidential vote? And what's age got to do with it? Should America's younger voters be judging by their own standards, by a different standard? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're holding a campus caucus tonight on the presidential campaign 2004. My guests are Charles Mitchell at Bucknell University, from Washington State University, Bridget Elliott, from University of Wisconsin-Madison, Evan Ritlaski, and from Oberlin College in Ohio, Renata Strauss. You can join the conversation as well. Do 20-somethings and 50-somethings have the same stake in deficits, in civil liberties, in Iraq? Can America's newest voters compete with the clout of the AARP, the boomer wave? And what do you think of the candidates' efforts to reach out to youth so far? The turtlenecks, the motorcycle, the electric guitar. Is that what works? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mitch is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Mitch. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the war in Iraq. I believe it's not going over well with a lot of the students. I do go to a very Republican-based school in UW-Waukesha, just outside of Milwaukee.
Okay.
But a lot of students believe that the war is wrong. I was a huge activist at my school going against the war. We are for the troops. We just believe that the war has been wrong, and the spending that they have been doing has been very wrong. I mean, a lot of students could have got the money for school because tuition got raised. A lot of students lost money.
$87 billion could go a long way. Where does that leave you imagining you might cast your vote, Mitch?
Definitely against Bush, whoever is going to be a Democrat, I believe. I don't see President Bush helping the nation if he's making a lot of misjudges in his spending.
So which Democrat are you ready to put your support behind?
I'd say Kerry is one of the strongest ones that we have at this moment.
Really? And why John Kerry?
He just seems to have a little bit more care for the middle-of-the-road kind of individual, not so much, just the common worker. I think a lot of his ideas and plans should be working for that individual, not so much as for Bush, for the people who have all the money and helping them.
Mitch, we've got it. Enough with the war and the spending on the war. Thanks for your call. Charles Mitchell, we've heard from your colleagues on our quick panel here tonight, but how about you there at Bucknell University? How are you personally seeing the war, and what's your analysis of how it's being received on your campus and among college students around the country?
It's interesting that you asked me that right after hearing from Mitch, because the argument that he just made is one that I hear a lot on my campus from our left groups. We're for the troops. We're just against the war. And to me, I don't know, it's an interesting argument. You know, we like the troops, but we don't like what they're doing, and we don't want it to succeed. I'm not really sure that's tenable. I'm not convinced that it's not, but it just strikes me as funny.
That's interesting, because an awful lot of Americans that we hear from have struck that position.
Yeah.
You're raising a question about it, but what's your sense on your campus? Is it does it lean against or for support of the war effort?
Our mainstream paper, the Bucknellian, took a poll last year, and I think a slight majority, maybe 50-55%, was in favor of the war. But the anti-war sentiment, like it at Wisconsin, while it may not be the majority, it is very loud. You know, there were protests every week against the war and all that. There was, on the other hand, there was one support the troops rally.
And what's your personal view of the war, Charles?
My personal view, to me, it's the most important thing that Bush is doing. There are a lot of things that he is doing that I'm upset with, and a lot of conservatives are upset with, and I think he's in trouble with his base for that reason. But you have to have priorities, and the priority for me is making things right after 9/11, making sure that that does not happen again.
And how does the war do that, in your view?
I think that what the president is at least trying to do, and I believe he's doing as well as anyone can at that, is preventing that. I think that what we have to do is make sure that there are not places like Iraq and Afghanistan that are just breeding grounds for terrorism. And it just, it really bugs me to hear people making these shrill cries that, oh, Bush lied. You know, the things that Bush said were no different than what Kerry said, than what Clinton said. And I have lists and lists of quotes of all these people saying, you know, Saddam, we think he has a chemical weapons program, blah, blah, blah. The only difference is that Bush did something about it. And I think you have to do something about it after 9/11.
Renata Strauss, what's your personal view on the war?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about this and then a lot of time protesting it. And, you know, while I completely agree that that having leaders like Saddam Hussein in Iraq was a very dangerous situation, and I, you know, I don't necessarily think that supporting the troops and saying, you know, I should say that being against the war means that you believe it shouldn't have ever happened, or that it, or that what's now, what's going on now is worse. I mean, certainly Saddam Hussein was terrible, and it's good that he's gone. But I believe that the way Bush went about doing it is just as wrong. I mean, quite frankly, I believe he used 9/11 as an excuse to storm into the Middle East and restructure it. There is evidence that he had plans before 9/11 to do this. I think that, you know, the sweetheart deals that we're seeing now with Halliburton, with oil deals, I really think that that's decent evidence that
Charles,
you know,
is saying, though, that Charles is saying he welcomes a restructuring to some extent of some of the wilder and woolier edges of the Middle East. What's your view?
Well, I think the fact of the matter is the way in which Bush went about doing it was unilaterally, yes, we had a few partners in it, but without UN support, we're really doing this in a way that makes America seem arrogant and disregarding of world opinion. And I believe that now's the time when we need partners elsewhere in the world to work with us. And we're setting ourselves up for a lot of danger.
Paul is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Paul, you're in the middle of a campus caucus. What's on your mind?
Hey, we're just calling from Thayer Street here in Providence, the home of Brown University.
Good to have you, my friend.
Thank you.
Take us away, Paul. What's on your mind?
Well, I take a couple of international relations classes, and the students there are very intelligent, and they seem to know what's going on with terrorism. And they understand that the president is leading the country, which is what he signed up for. And we have these college professors who are trying to brainwash us.
So you're saying you support Bush's effort and the students are more savvy than the professors on your campus?
Well, I don't want to die, and I have friends from New York, being a New Yorker, and college professors at Brown University, they have an agenda.
Paul, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Bridget Elliott, how about this sentiment? We've seen it expressed in conservative corners across the country, a kind of generation gap that has grown up on some campuses where some students feel that they've got, you know, professors of a rather uniform mindset.
I would definitely agree. I think that it may not be like the generation gap necessarily, but academic integrity. There's a lot that gets passed through the classroom and to a captive audience of young individuals that I would completely disagree with on the basis that it can be really unfounded and very biased. And the problem is that when it is one side leaning, the other perspective is silenced. It's not necessarily even the danger of those opinions just being expressed by professor, which is daunting in itself being a student, especially if you disagree because you feel as though you have a higher standard in, you know, defending your views as opposed to a student that would, you know, repeat the, you know, just re-chorus what they hear from the professor. So it's a big issue with, I know, my group, my peer group, that to just be aware of what we're being taught. And brainwashing is a bold statement, but at times I've sat back and watched, you know, entry-level courses on international relations or sociology or ethnic studies just pass off one side as being the ultimate truth. And I'd say that learning is definitely a pursuit through binaries or through...
Beyond that. Got it. Of course, brainwashing can work in all kinds of directions. Evan, what about on your campus there in Wisconsin, Evan? Do you have conservative constituencies there who complain about a liberal bias on campus? Is there a generation gap at all? How do you describe it?
You know, it's interesting. There used to be this perception that there wasn't a conservative voice on campus, and well, a lot of the concerns that other people have said were mirrored on our campus, and that we didn't have conservative voices, and that the left was sort of stopping free speech from the right. I don't think that exists anymore. We had a faculty speech code that we abolished, actually, in 1999. Mm-hmm. And under that code, basically any student can complain about what a professor said. And so if a professor said something that was deemed to be racially insensitive, that student could complain. And you could see how that would be sort of a barrier to free speech, especially on the right.
Yep.
We don't have that anymore. And while I think there's still a concern that we don't have as many conservative professors as we do liberal ones, nobody's really complaining about it. The point of college is to go and get exposed to different ideas. And yes, sometimes you get exposed to ideas from the left, and sometimes you get exposed to ideas from the right. And you may not agree with them, but it's sort of condescending to say that we're so impressionable that we can't distinguish what's opinion.
Yeah, I guess so. Bill's calling from Tomahawk, Wisconsin. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for letting me get my 2 cents worth.
Good to have you.
I'm an alumni of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I went to school there in the 60s.
Great.
As did Dick Cheney, by the way. So,
yes, absolutely. That's right.
So just, you know, and I was a political science student there. I studied international relations, and Dick and I are about as far apart as we could possibly get. But that's not my question.
Every planet has its poles, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. and we certainly form them, north and south.
Yeah.
My question was this. I'm a member of the boomer generation, and between us and our children, who are maybe not so much children any longer,
that's right,
young adults,
mm-hmm,
we form a majority.
The boomers do, that is.
Yeah, us and our children are,
right,
a clear political majority in this country. We can have any government that we want to.
I see, if you put it together, right? Got
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Do college students feel a kinship with their parents? In other words, are they worried about our old age? Are they willing to are they willing to help us secure our old age? Because we're getting preciously close. I'm 59 years old, and I'm going to depend on Social Security and Medicare.
Which means depending on this next generation. Of course, they have their own old age to eventually be worried about. But let's ask. It's a great question. Charles Mitchell, let me go to you first. I guess two questions there. One, what do you think of the burden of supporting seniors, including soon boomers? And two, what about your politics compared to your parents? Are they similar or are they different?
Okay. Well, with regard to the first question, I would tell your caller, why doesn't he worry about his own retirement? I mean, sure, there are people who need Social Security, need Medicare, but I think that people ought to be more proactive when they're working as far as saving. And I think...
Well, he's 59, my friend. I mean,
it doesn't leave a century,
you know.
I'm well aware. I mean, you know, him, my parents, you know, people that are younger, I mean, he hasn't always been 59. He's assumedly been working for some 25 years. And for him to come right out and say, well, I'm going to be depending on Social Security and Medicare, you know, I kind of have an issue with that mentality. You know, when I get
does
old,
that mean you're not going
to
be willing to, if you're voting on it, you're not going to be ready to shoulder it, to take the burden?
I'm not saying not any of the burden. I'm saying not all the burden. I don't think that people should be completely dependent on Social Security. And I think that to create a system in which that is the case, if it is really pretty untenable. You know, people need to take a bigger responsibility for their own retirement. You know, 401ks are a great tax shelter.
So watch out, Bill. I don't hear Charles chomping at the bit to pick up that burden. But Charles, how about the question of your politics compared to your own parents,
sure,
let's say?
You know, a lot of people have this preconception that all conservatives are, you know, from blue blood families of old school Republicans who voted for Wendell Willkie. That's not.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've gotten that stereotype a lot on campus. Maybe it's just Bucknell, but mm-hmm, I don't think so. My mother is a 60s Democrat. You know, she registered to vote in 1969. She's been a Democrat ever since. My dad is a Republican kind of for the same reason I am, just so he can vote in the primary. Our politics are different in a bunch of ways, but my mother and I are like opposite. She votes because my dad votes.
And do you debate with your mother on the issues? She's a lifelong Democrat, it sounds like. What does she think of your politics?
Well, I think she thinks they're neat because I get to like go on the radio and stuff. and I think she's thinking about switching to Republican, which is pretty funny. But
to keep her son employed on the radio interviews.
I guess. I don't know. but we don't really have debates. I mean, my dad and I, like if we're watching Meet the Press or something, we'll talk a little bit, and you say, oh, well, look at that guy, you know, he's being mm-hmm. a moron or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom and I, we don't really do it. Like, I remember when I was in fifth grade or something, it was the 92 election, and I was still, you know, little enough that she would take me with her to vote, and I went in the voting booth and tried to get her to vote for George Bush because I liked his name or something, but ever since then, the level of political debate between me and my mom's kind of died down. So we kind of leave each other alone.
Right, the curtain is down a bit. Renata Strauss, how about yourself? Just give us an insight into the intergenerational politics in the Strauss household. Are your politics similar to your parents or different?
Well, that's actually a pretty funny question because my father, both my parents have been lifelong Democrats until about 3 or 4 years ago when my father switched his registration to Republican, primarily actually also to vote in the primaries. We come from a pretty conservative area, and he thinks that's where his vote counts the most. But mm-hmm. recently, actually, since I've been at Oberlin College, I don't know if it's, you know, my influence. I'd like to think that it is maybe. But my father has been starting to move more and more towards the left. And as I've actually was just home over Thanksgiving, we had a conversation about how he may now be switching his registration back to Democrat. Although, as I said, you know, I'd like to think that that's been my convincing arguments. I think civil liberties have been a really big issue for him, and watching those being trampled, I know, sort of been pulling him back towards the Democratic Party. But it's interesting, the generation gap in my household is not quite so prevalent between myself and my parents as it is between my parents and my grandparents. I always grew up assuming that my grandparents were fairly conservative, and my mom's parents came out to visit me not too long ago, and we had a 3-hour-long conversation in which I discovered that we completely agreed on the war in Iraq and on abortion rights and on gay rights mm-hmm. and, you know, a whole host of issues. So I think it's interesting because young people, I hope that young people aren't too quick to dismiss, you know, older generations as being completely different from themselves, and that, you know, I think that really what we need is a better dialogue between generations. I think that's really where a lot of progressive action can take place, and we'll get young people involved.
You're very generous there. Evan Rutlowski, how about yourself? And I wonder in particular on a kind of a scale of optimism at one end and fear at the other about the future. How would you place yourself compared to your parents or elders that you respect?
I think we're all sort of operating on fear, but just different sorts of fear. I know that my dad is a Republican, and I respect him a lot, and he respects me a lot. He feels very strongly that the war in Iraq was the right thing to do and something that we absolutely needed to do, and that I would say, was probably based on fear. Fear of, if we didn't strike preemptively, perhaps we would, you know, be the victim of another terrorist attack. Our generation, we have a fear, but it's not like Homeland Security. We don't particularly care about that. We do have sort of that invincible mentality. We care more about civil liberties. We care about gay rights, and we care about reproductive rights. We care about these things, especially with civil liberties. We're afraid that those will be taken away from us.
Gay rights has been a big issue on the Wisconsin campus, I understand.
A huge issue, yes. Our state attempted to pass some legislation that redefined marriage as between a man and a woman. And we have a large gay population on campus and a large population that cares about gay issues, and they were very vocal about that.
Do you think voters your age will vote on that issue, whether or not they're gay?
You know, I wish they could, but it's one of those things where our generation is at odds with other generations in that you'd be hard-pressed to find a viable major presidential candidate that could be vocally for gay rights. Even Howard Dean, who has marketed himself as, you know, the Democrats' Democrat, you know, the guy of the left, he really hasn't been able to take a stand.
Not there for you.
Marriage.
We're going to come back and talk about those candidates. We're talking tonight with college students about the presidential campaign 2004. You can join the conversation. Is there a youth-inspiring beacon in this field? Is it George Bush? Is it Howard Dean? And what's the world these young voters are headed into? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're holding a little campus caucus tonight on the presidential campaign 2004. I'm joined by 4 college students from across the country, not every corner, but not bad. Charles Mitchell is at Bucknell University in Pennsylvania. He's a history and economics major, a conservative, not a Republican, he'll tell you. Bridget Elliott joins us from Washington State University in Pullman, Washington. She's a poli-sci and pre-law student there, 20 years old, president of the College Republicans Organization at Washington State. Evan Rutlowski joins us from Madison, Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin-Madison, majoring in psychology. He's editor-in-chief of the student newspaper there, the Daily Cardinal. And Renata Strauss is with us from Oberlin, Ohio, at Oberlin College. She's majoring in politics and is treasurer of Oberlin's College Democrats. You can join the conversation as well. Will this be your first presidential vote? And what's your question for these voters, for America's purely 21st century voters? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Rael is calling from Boston. Hi, Rael. You're on the air.
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Just fine, thanks. Hello, are you there, Royal?
Yes, I am.
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, throughout this ordeal, I really believe that we have two sides, two arguments going on. One basically for the war and the efforts against terrorism, and the other side that is against the war. Not necessarily against protecting against terrorism, but against the war.
Okay.
And I really believe that it's not as simple as sometimes it's played out to be.
Clearly not much simple about it. How do you think that's going to play out politically, though, Royal?
Well, I believe most people will go on their gut instinct. Either they're going to say, we're not for the war, so we're not going to vote for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Although that might not be the best thing, because maybe there are other aspects of the Bush administration that could benefit you. But then on the other side, some people will say, I'm going to vote for Bush just because, you know, he's doing a good job with the war, protecting my children.
Right.
Da, 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 da.
And presto, you're in the middle of all the conundrums that come along with having to decide. Royal, thanks for your call. We've got many torches carried by many different candidates here, and a lot of candidates, given the size of the Democratic field. I want to turn to our panel tonight and get some of your views on the candidates who are out there. We'll talk about George Bush, and we have some already, but what about the Democrats? Renata, let me turn to you. Who's impressing you? What impression are individual Democratic presidential candidates making on you?
On me personally?
Yes.
Well, I'll be honest with you. It's a pretty divided field, and it's a hard thing to sort of chew and swallow to take in all of these candidates at once. My interests have mostly been leaning towards Howard Dean, in large part for the way he's running his campaign. I agree with critics both on the left and on the right, and here at Oberlin, the College Democrats seem to get more critics on the left than from the right,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, that say that the Democratic Party really has lost its base and in some ways has lost its sense of self. You know, I think that we need to... We need to remobilize our base. We need to expand the pie and reach out to new voters, you know, young voters in particular. And I think that some of the ways that Howard Dean's campaign have been doing that through meetups and through small campaign donations and through contact with young voters is really important to me. And, you know, I really hope for a revitalization of the Democratic Party at all levels.
And you think Howard Dean might deliver it? Evan Rutlowski, you've got a Democratic badge on there, I guess. So who are you favoring in the Democratic field so far?
Oh, I'm pretty split. Like a lot of Democrats, I'll be voting in large part on viability. Can this candidate beat Bush? I know that there was a perception that Dean wasn't particularly viable because he stood too far to the left. And I think that the more one examines his record and his statements, which are made pretty carefully, they'll see that that's not necessarily the case, that this is a moderate candidate who really can appeal to people in the general election. And that excites me in that I'm glad he has a chance, but also it is a little bit disappointing when you look at his record on gun rights, his statements on gay rights, things like that. The other main one in the polls will indicate that he stands the best chance against Bush is General Wesley Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to rally around him because he's a Democrat who was, you know, a Democrat for 25 days before announcing his candidacy. But in some senses, he has a very interesting position in that he initially supported the president, like a lot of Americans.
In the vote on Iraq in particular, do you mean?
Especially in Iraq, mm-hmm. Yeah. He said, you know, it's his duty as an American to support the president. He took the president at his word that there was some information to go into Iraq that he wasn't being told. And when it became evident that that information did not exist, he changed his stance. And in a sense, I think that a lot of Americans can relate to that. I'm not sure if it's a completely honest stance. I'm not sure if he just took that anti-war position because he saw that no Democrat would really stand a chance being pro-war. But it is an interesting position that really could appeal to the general voter. So I'm pretty undecided as to who I'll vote for.
Alexis calling from Providence. Hi, Alexa. You're on the air.
Hi. Great. I'm actually a student coordinator for Wesley Clark's campaign here, and one of the difficulties we've encountered is that the liberal platform is a lot harder to articulate on campus than the conservative platform.
Now, why is that?
It seems to be a bit nuanced. No one really knows where their loyalties lie, even the way the Democratic campaigns are being run, particularly. He's sort of soft on gay issues, and obviously his conservative, Confederate flag, but then on other issues, he's a lot more forward. So it seems a lot of people are just projecting onto these candidates rather than getting some sort of highly articulated movement points. And so the conservative movement here has gained a lot of steam recently because they have these sort of packaged points that they've gotten out.
You're saying George W. Bush is an easier sell on college campus?
Sell. He has conviction and he lacks substance. And so in trying to market other candidates, Wesley Clark particularly, who's written, you know, tremendous amounts about the war, it's harder to, you know, reduce him to these statements. I'm wondering if other students have encountered similar problems, if, you know, the liberal cause is harder to articulate.
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me put it first to our conservative guest tonight. And Alexa, thanks for your call. Bridget Elliott, how about it? You know... what it's like for you as a college Republican holding up the megaphone for George Bush, and you've no doubt watched as college Democrats on your campus do it. Who's got the easier job?
I would say that both are tough on campus. Like I said, the big issues do galvanize activity or awareness within students, and when you don't have those, it is hard to get people motivated to be active and do things. I would say that we definitely have an easier job as far as articulating a platform. I would disagree with the lack of substance that the caller articulated that President Bush has. I think that that his intentions are often misunderstood, and they come from like a deeper sense of wanting to expand liberal democracy. And I'm surprised that more liberals wouldn't embrace that idea.
Renata, let me put the same question to you. At Oberlin, Alexa says it's easier to kind of stand up and speak clearly about what George Bush stands for, if I'm interpreting her correctly. Have you seen that?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, we have sort of an interesting situation at Oberlin in so much as we don't have too many people standing up and articulating what George Bush is proposing or anything in his campaign platform. Mm-hmm. You know, for us as college Democrats and for other members of the political left on this campus, you know, I think that it is more difficult in some respects because we do have a lot of substance. We have a lot of ground to cover, and I don't think it's just a matter of attacking the president. The Democrats are taking a lot of heat for, you know, running negative campaigns and simply running an attack. And the fact of the matter is we have really complex issues to deal with. And, you know, I don't think that the president is simply rhetoric, although he's very good at that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is I don't think he's dealing with substance in the way that Democratic candidates would like for him to. You know, it's a lot of pomp and circumstance on the president's part.
Charles Mitchell, let me put a question to you. The country right now is kind of famously split, something like 50-50. I don't know what exactly the numbers are, but the blue and the red America. Do you think it will be the same in your generation?
I kind of feel like we're at a tipping point right now. I think somebody is going to pull ahead. And until a little while ago, I thought it was going to be the Republicans or the conservatives, however you want to think about it. But then, you know, we started having these stories on the news every night about all these bad things happening in Iraq. I think 9/11 changed our generation in a really unique way. It just, you know, our country was attacked. That's not supposed to happen. And it hit home to people, whether you're from New York City or not. You know, I'm not from New York City. And it's just, I think it affected us. I think people of my generation are more inclined to have American flags on their cars or things like that. And I think people are looking for, right now, the thing that is going to make them safer, or the candidate or the party or whatever that's going to make them safer. And they're no longer convinced that it is George Bush. I think that if George Bush can convince us, or Americans, that he is making us safer, that the war in Iraq did so, then he can craft a permanent majority for his side. But if the Democrats can convince us, on the other hand, that, you know, what we did is making us less safe, then, you know, they could be golden for the next 10 or 20 years.
Well, there's the debate to watch. We're out of time, and I'm sorry for it. I hope we can have you all back. But I want to thank each of you for being with us tonight. Evan Rutlaski in Madison, Wisconsin, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Renata Strauss at Oberlin College, thanks for being on tonight.
Thank you.
Bridget Elliott in Pullman, Washington, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Charles Mitchell at Bucknell, thanks to you.
Hey, my pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onepointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, John Kerry courts the college vote. This is On Point. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry took his message to college-age voters today. Speaking at Boston University, Kerry told students that the history of this country has been written by young people who were willing to engage in the political process.
It was young students at colleges who got on buses and went down to the South in this country and broke the back of segregation. It was students who became known as the Peanut Butter and Jelly Brigade, who went up to New Hampshire and knocked on doors and handed out leaflets and talked to people in houses and told them what was wrong with the war in Vietnam. And so Lyndon Johnson was not able to run for president after what happened up there. It was students who went out and helped give the energy to the women's movement that helped to begin the consciousness of this country about hiring and about pay and about choice and rights. All of those things came out of the energy and enthusiasm and idealism of people who believed that individually they could go out and make a difference. The Housing Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, every single one of those things came out of the energy and the enthusiasm and the devotion and the commitment and the time of individuals who went out and made a difference in the political process. So you can be cynical about it if you want. There's that great question in life about, you know, if not now, when? And if not you, then who? Who's going to do it? And what's the alternative? The alternative is that you have more of the same. The alternative is that the deficits get bigger. The alternative is that your tuitions go up. The alternative is that you can't find the jobs. The alternatives are that the world gets more dangerous. The alternative is that we walk away from our responsibilities. And that's unacceptable, and you know it.
Massachusetts Senator and Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry speaking to students at Boston University earlier today. Afterwards, some of the roughly 300 students who attended talked about which portions of Kerry's speech spoke to them and which did not.
I think that there was a lot of good policies that were spoken about today. A lot of maybe attacks on the Bush administration, a little bit more than I expected. So I would like to hear more about what Kerry would like to do. There was a lot of focus on education reform because of the audience, because we are a college university today. So that was nice to hear, too.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I really liked a lot of his domestic policies in terms of taxation and energy and environment. I liked a lot of what he had to say there. And he served on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for a while, so, I mean, that's promising in terms of his foreign policy. But I don't know if he really set out any new initiatives for that here. I mean, it was more of a attack on Bush's policies. So I would like to hear more of what he has to say on those aspects as well. I think one of the policies he announced that really would connect with college students that I liked was that he would offer tuition reimbursements or whatever they were to students who serve for 2 years, who serve the community for 2 years coming out of high school. And I think that is a really good plan. It's like expanding the AmeriCorps to a younger age too. And I think that's a great idea.
I think by him stating exactly what he wanted to do, he was very clear-cut, and he stated what Bush's position was and then changed that and told us what he wanted to do himself. And he said a lot about college students and college tuition and da-da-da-da, and he said a lot of things that applied to us directly and things that we would feel wholeheartedly about. And I think that was a very good way to engage us into a lot of things.
It was really, like, a really well-prepared speech and very, like, directed towards the right crowd.
Right.
And I think technically, like, he has a good shot at this.
Students reacting to Senator John Kerry's pitch for student involvement delivered earlier today in Boston. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Julie Jopp, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tib Skoke. With help from Sarah Cook and Sean Carberry, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.